You're listening to Naked Oceans with Sarah Castor Perry and me, Helen Scales. This month we're talking about seabirds. Later in the show we'll catch up with the magnificent species that glides through the skies on the world's largest living wings, and we find out how fisheries are affecting its population on a sub-Antarctic island. But first, to get the bigger picture of threats to seabirds and efforts underway to protect them, I spoke with Ben Lassels from BirdLife International, whose headquarters are here in Cambridge. He's been working on a global initiative to set up a network of conservation zones called Important Bird Areas, or IBAs. These have been around for a while on land, but now they're being moved offshore to protect those birds that spend time at sea. I caught up with Ben in a coffee shop in Cambridge.
So, Ben, birds are notoriously mobile. How can a fixed protected area actually contribute to protecting them at a global scale? What sort of things go on inside these areas? Presumably this is places where they breed, where they feed, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so there's really kind of four types of site that we feel are suitable for site-based conservation approaches. So those are areas around the breeding colony where birds feed or roost, non-breeding areas where they might congregate in coastal zones, migration bottlenecks, and then pelagic feeding areas around things like seamounts, upwellings, all that kind of stuff.
Presumably there are an awful lot of marine species that, you know, use the ocean for some or part of their lifespans. I mean, are we talking hundreds of species, thousands of species?
So we have a list of about 350 species that rely on the marine environment for at least part of the year. Some of those are true seabirds that people think of, like penguins and albatrosses. But there are a number of other more coastal species, things like terns and cormorants, that also might be suitable for this kind of approach.
And what sort of threats are we talking about?
Probably the biggest is bycatch, incidental bycatch from fisheries activities. Longline fishing is particularly bad for that and can kill hundreds of thousands of seabirds a year. So we really feel these sites can help inform where bycatch management can be used. The work we're doing can also inform other ocean user groups. Things like offshore wind farms can be particularly bad for some species. Oil and gas exploration development, management of oil spills. There's a whole range of things that either cause direct mortality to seabirds or have incidental secondary effects. One of the challenges is to try and convince people that there are lots of birds in a particular location now, that they'll be there next year or the year after. And for some places, that's relatively easy when you've got some kind of static feature like a seamount. But in other cases, that's quite hard, where you have moving frontal zones or upwelling systems that can be seasonal or vary annually.
And I've got to assume that by taking on the marine realm, you're introducing a whole new set of challenges to doing this kind of approach to conservation. And what are some of those things that you've had to deal with?
One of the biggest challenges is data. The oceans are so vast that having useful data to analyse to come up with these sites in a consistent and defensible way is quite a challenge. Defining boundaries is very difficult, because in terrestrial environments where a forest ends and a road begins is usually pretty obvious, but we don't have that luxury in the marine environment. So basing it on lines of latitude, longitude, bathymetry, that kind of thing, you need to use some slightly different approaches to come up with sites. So I'd say those are the two main challenges, really.
And are you going out taking new data, or is the idea really to make use of what's already out there?
Well, very much to try and pull together what's already exists so we can make a good first cut of the sites. And we really rely on three or four types of data. So satellite tracking data being a key one for us, at-sea survey data from boats and planes, and then coastal counts can be useful as well. And there's new advances in things like radar that can be used to identify where birds are and in what numbers.
So you've got this idea of gathering data together to find out parts of the ocean that birds use. Mm-hmm. And the important bird areas are going to become a sort of a network, is that right? You're looking at establishing a global system for protecting seabirds. Is there a sort of a goal in terms of the area you want to cover, or how do you decide this is going to do the job we want it to do?
I don't think we have a sort of overall percentage that we're aiming for. We're more keen to ensure that sites are located in the right places to protect the right things. So really we're letting the data tell us where sites should be, how big they should be, so that we can build up some good justification for them. And then once we have a sort of complete network for species and regions, we should be in a position then to see what percentage overall that is.
I guess the question then becomes, once you've identified this network, how do we then go about implementing that and putting in conservation measures? What sort of things can we do to protect these birds?
One of the key things we're trying to do, having identified sites, is link to relevant policy mechanisms like the CBD, the Convention on Biological Diversity, or relevant regional agreements, things like in the Northeast Atlantic we have the OSPAR Convention. Elsewhere in the world, there are things like the Nairobi Convention for the Indian Ocean, ASEAN Agreement for Southeast Asia, and there are a number of others around the world. So we're trying to build the capacity of our birdlife partners to engage in these kind of agreements and put forward a network of sites that we feel are robust and have lots of support as to why they're important, and also make the point that seabirds occur in areas used by lots of other marine biodiversity, things like seamounts, upwellings, continental shelf, all those kind of things. And birds at the top of the food chain, you can really use them as indicators of the state of the marine environment more generally.
Fantastic. And where are we at with this whole process of putting important bird areas into the sea? Are there any that have already been set up, or is this something that's about to happen and we'll see it in the coming years?
So I think the first attempts were probably done getting on for 10 years ago now, but really BirdLife has only had a coordinated approach to this for the last 5 or 6 years. So there are now several national inventories of marine IBA. Some of the first were in Alaska, the Baltic, and Iberian Peninsula, Spain and Portugal. And we hope to launch later this year our first global inventory of marine IBAs, to launch that at the next Conference of the Parties of the Convention on Biological Diversity in October 2012.
And are there any examples of a site that you've looked at or that's, you know, it's jumped out as being obviously a very important site for birds? I mean, are there any that are just spectacular places you've seen yourself that just makes you think this has got to be protected?
Well, I mean, there's certainly lots of the major currents of the world. So the Benguela, the Agulhas, the Humboldt Current, California Current, long recognised as being key places for breeding seabirds and during the non-breeding season. I've been to the Humboldt a couple of times and done boat trips out there, and the scale and the sheer number of birds and right whales and things like that, you know, is staggering.
The only place that I've had a similar experience is further north, but in California and Monterey. Mm-hmm. And I did once have a day out at sea when one of those kind of bait balls, and there were just hundreds and hundreds of dolphins and whales and seabirds, and you're just in the middle of it all. Yeah. And it's just spectacular. It's just unbelievable.
Well, I think everyone should try and see that at least once in their lives. I mean, that's an amazing event, and I don't think would leave anyone in any doubt that something has to be done to manage and protect these places in a sustainable way.
That was Ben Lassels from the Global Seabird Programme at BirdLife International, talking about his work on a new generation of conservation areas designed specifically to protect seabirds. Well, that first global list of important bird areas in the marine realm will be coming out later this year, so we'll be keeping an eye out for that.